Lads and lasses and good day mates, welcome to another episode of the Tune Under Podcast, the Southern Hemisphere's number one podcast for all things Newcastle United. We are going to be talking about a few things tonight. We're going to be talking about the stadium expansion plans, a little bit of excitement's been generating lately, and we'll also talk about some potential summer signings, a particular Fulham defender we might have a little word about, and then we'll end with probably in reality a bit of a short preview of the Burnley game this weekend, joined by Craigie. Let's just dive straight into it, shall we? Let's talk about the stadium plans. What has been generating all of the buzz these last few days?
Well, the six-month feasibility report has finally finished. So this was basically a plan given to a load of architects, probably from around the world, said this is the stadium, we want to expand it, show us your best work effectively. And that report is now finished. It has yet to be made public, but it's due to be made public soon by many reports out there. What will this report show us? Who knows? One thing it will give is a few ideas to what the stadium could potentially increase its capacity to. Currently, it's a little over 52,000, as everyone knows. A lot of people reckon 65 would probably be about the sweet spot. We actually ran a poll on Twitter yesterday, and 65,000 was pretty much the majority vote on that one for what people would like to see as maybe a bare minimum. I think anything less might be considered as a waste of time, effort, and money. But in terms of staying at St. James's Park, that is the biggest news as far as I'm concerned. Not really bothered what the capacity goes to. Staying where we should be at home at Barrett Road is when Newcastle United belong, as far as I want to be. Yes, we could move to Leasers Park, but nah, stay exactly where we are, build on the current structure, and take it from there.
Yeah, so Darren Eales said it sometime in the last six, well, probably before this feasibility study started, that staying at St. James's Park was kind of the ideal solution, whatever that solution might look like. I think probably part of that was to keep the fans on board with the whole process. Yes, everyone knows that we want to stay at St. James's Park, if at all possible. But it's that if possible part that we need to figure out. And if it is possible, what does that look like? You know, so I've been reading that they've been talking about extending the stadium or renovating the stadium one way or another on the current site to get it into the 60,000-seater stadium range. Let's just say, for argument's sake, like, let's just have a chat about this. Like, let's say, for example, we stayed at St. James's Park in exactly the current position, and we did some kind of magic to extend the east stand, probably is the most obvious one to extend, and we got that up to the attendance up to 60,000, and maybe it's a little bit of loose change, but like no more than 61,000. Would you be happy with that?
Yes, because we're staying at St. James's, and that is my ultimate goal. I understand the need in the future we may need to move away, but staying at St. James's is the number one. As you mentioned, the East Stand is probably the most feasible option in terms of increasing the capacity. I reckon working on the corners as well, on the Leasers and the Gallagher, filling those in as part of the East Stand redevelopment would add a significant extra numbers to the seats too. But obviously, there's the big plan and permission with the grade listed buildings behind it. It's a shame, you know, none of them can just randomly fall down over the next year or so and they become derelict or anything like that. Going to happen, not saying I want it to happen, but you know, in the best interest of every Newcastle United fan out there, that would be a big thing, because then the East Stand could get pushed that way back and then the stadium could look a bit more balanced.
Yeah, well, let's hope Northumberland police aren't watching this, because I think they might have a suspect if that row of houses suddenly bursts into flames over the next couple of days. No, they're obviously grade listed for a good reason. They're the historical one way or another. I forget the exact reason why they were listed, to be honest. But they are there. They're not going to go anywhere, I don't think. We say that the East Stand's the most obvious to enhance purely because it's, you know, it's a very small one compared to the other three sides. But it is hemmed in by those buildings, as you say. So the solution isn't just as straightforward as pushing outwards. There's got to be some other kind of funky kind of thing going on, lowering the pitch or moving things around a little bit, whatever it might be. I'm just kind of interested, though. If you'd be happy with 60,000 at St. James's, but is there a threshold where you might go, all right, now we're going to move? Like, oh, if we all know that we have to increase revenue, we all know that we have tons of fans who are trying to get these tickets, we all know the drama behind the ballot system and everything else. If the solution was, look, sorry guys, there just isn't an answer that we can go with here, we're just going to have to stay here at 52,000 and you're all just going to have to struggle forevermore, you'd still be happy with that as well, even though it means we aren't getting the increased seats, the bums on seats, the money coming through and all the rest of it?
I think a minimum expectation for myself, realistically, would be at least 10,000 seats added on. So getting to 62,000. That would be the bare minimum I see would be a decent amount worthwhile doing. Anything less, like I say, it wouldn't be worth it for the time and money spent, because I don't think you would make it back enough or quick enough by the time that you've got, then got to get to the next stage of development within the stadium, you know. But yeah, minimum 10,000. Is it doable? Who knows? We'll find out when these plans are finally made public, I suppose.
Okay. I mean, that wasn't really what I asked you. So if it stayed at 52,000 and the guys just said, look, we cannot actually do it anymore, we're just going to have to suffer without any more bums on seats, no more money coming in, everyone's going to have to fight over the bloody ballot system forevermore, you would still be happy purely because we're at St. James's Park? Is that what your position would be?
Yes. That stadium is, you know, it's been part of my life since God knows how long. And it has been for a lot of other people.
You've got a smirk on your face, and there was a distinct pause before you answered there, mate. Come on.
Look, I totally understand that the reasoning why people think we should and need to move away from St. James's Park, because the stadium and the club needs to grow as the club gets more recognised global, and hopefully we start winning trophies. You know, we're going to need a bigger trophy cabinet rather than just a glass display one from IKEA that we've probably got right now. It's just one of those things that I do see as an inevitability. I just don't want it to be for the foreseeable future. You know, I grew up with St. James's Park in my life, just as you have. I used to see St. James's Park every day from when I went to school. I could see it in the distance from when I used to go to school in Wild's End. On Churchill Street, you could see it from the top of the hill. It was there every single day. And I don't think I could go back there and look at that same view and not see St. James's, because some titters take the bulldozer to it. It just wouldn't look right for me. And that's just the whole nostalgia factor. Many others will feel the same, but many others, as we know from social media, and even discussions with our very own Keegan, he obviously wants to stay at St. James's, but he knows fine well the future of the club is probably away from where we're currently at right now.
I mean, my position on this is that I don't think we need to be wedded to the exact rectangle envelope bit of land where the stadium sits. I'm not massively wedded to the stadium itself. It's only been there for, 30 years or something, for John Hall when he renovated the whole place. It's not like that's... that's been there for most of our kind of grown-up years, you know, all of our formative years, and that's kind of the stadium that most of us will recognise. I'm old enough to remember what it was like when it was the other way around as well, but
yeah,
my memory on that's pretty faded now. So when I think about St. James's, I think about the cantilever structure that we've got. My thought is that, as again, we should necessarily be bound by historical memories of days gone by. I'm trying to think of the exact words, historical memories. We shouldn't be kind of pining over the past achievements. The land is the land. The stadium is fairly new in the scheme of things. What I'm trying to get at is, in my opinion, if we could move the stadium into Leasers Park a bit, whatever that might look like, maybe even rotate the stadium a little bit to kind of match the angle of Barrack Road as it comes down from the central motorway, take up a little bit of Lisa's props, demolish the Lisa's end and start building a new stadium from that point. So you can imagine how the new Gallagher would be where the Lisa's is, but then we move into the Lisa's Park itself. I am aware that the Lisa's is like a, the Lisa's Park is a bit of a conservation area. So this is probably why, if anything happens, it's going to be a renovation. If we are stuck to that particular plot of land, it's going to be some kind of renovation because we can't knock the buildings down, and the conservation area means that we're kind of buggered there as well. So I kind of understand why we're going to end up the way we are probably going to go. But I think if we could, if there was some way we could do it where we just branch into Lisa's Park a little bit, because ultimately that is still a city centre location.
Yeah. It's
the length of a football pitch away from the classic bit of ground where St. James's Park was. Who gives a shit, really? It's got, it'll have the same aspect coming up the hill. You should be able to see it still. And I'm sure if they wanted to, they could just raise it a little bit so that you can guarantee to see it from, you know, the gates outside or whatever it might be. You know, going over Sheriff Hill, you get that lump, you can see it right in the distance on the other side of the river. All those sorts of things could be probably quite easily handled in some ways, in my opinion, being an absolute novice at any of this stuff. Don't take any of my word for any of this stuff. But I think the key things that people want is like, right, it needs to basically be the same location. It needs to be decent size. And I want to be able to see it the way I've always been able to see it, the cathedral on the hill, that kind of cliched bit now that people talk about. And I think you could do all that stuff if we could just get a little bit into Lisa's Park. And then we haven't got to worry too much about the listed buildings on the side. We can renature the bit that was at the front end next to, you know, the Strawberry Pub and all that area that we'd be vacating. That could become like a nice little nature patch or something like that. Would you go for something like that? Would people of your opinion, do you think, accept something like that? Or does it have to rigidly be that particular rectangular envelope of space where the stadium is right now? Can it not move from that spot, that very spot?
Unless the plans and designs actually blow my mind, then I'm staying where we are. When that video started circulating on YouTube, however many weeks ago it was, where they showed the different designs and options they got, I'm all for one of expanding the East Stand and Gallagher before anything else. That would be my number one and main priority. Moving away from St. James's, even if it is just at Lisa's Park, would be my last priority.
But we can't extend the East. We can't extend the East Stand. Like, if you're looking at the map, you can't just go, all right, let's just extend it outwards because the buildings. But the Gallagher's got the problem of the road and the emergency access, and they can't really have people go underneath it during a match day. So what do we, you know, we don't know what the solution is. We don't know what they're going to announce. It might be that they do just simply, you know, pitch up the East Stand and raise it a little bit and get a few more seats in. Like, I think it was it Borussia Dortmund, the stand that you showed us on the chat not so long ago?
It was definitely a German team, Brighton Dresden, something like that, where they've got like a two-tiered staggered stadium. It's in concept form at the minute, but they reckon it's going to be given the green light.
And that'd be very, very vertical. And you know, obviously the higher you are, the more vertical your seats are getting. The issue then would be the right to light for the people down behind it in those buildings, if they put a claim in.
The one thing with the East Stand is it's as old as time itself. I mean, when was the last time that thing was actually redeveloped? It was probably back when we went to 32,000 or 36,000, whatever it is, when Keegan was manager first time round. So that stand itself is as old as time. They could probably, in all theory, knock that down to scratch, take it right down to rubble, rebuild it from the very foundations that it sits on, build it with glass lightweight materials, that sort of thing, squeeze in a few extra thousand, make it that staggered tier that we just talked about. And because you've got glass and everything like that, they're not going to lose out on any light or anything like that. And that is something that would definitely be doable. And it's not going to be that much of a disruption taken with East Stand as it would be knocking down the entire Lisa's end while they rebuild it in Lisa's Park. Again, just another opinion.
True, but is that going to get you 10,000 bums on seats minimum?
I don't know what the current capacity of the East Stand is right now. And if anybody does know, let us know down below. But I do think the way they could stagger the stadium, stagger that stand, sorry, if they could get, I don't know, two lots of 8,000 TS Stadium and then fill out the corner on the Gallagher. Who knows? That could maybe get you your 10, 12, 15,000 extra bums on seats. Because I don't know if you last time you were in the East Stand, but that thing is so dated. Now I've been there for well over 7 years. Well, maybe about 7 years now. So God knows what condition it's in. And the amount of space between the old concrete slabs that are supporting it, those big beams, they're taking up a huge amount of space as well. So all I've got to do is knock that down, put a few lightweight girders in there, a bit of glass, make it look a bit more modern, and away you go. That for me, the biggest thing is the East Stand, just because it's very old and could easily be redeveloped.
There you go, everybody. That's all you've got to do, in the words of Chief Architect and Engineer Craig over here. So if Murdad or Amanda are watching, you know, give us a line and we'll put you in touch with the boss over here and we'll get it sorted out for you. Lickety split. No, but give him a call. No big dramas. All right, look, let's move on to the next point. Summer signings. Now, I have to pronounce this name. So there's one particular name that's been doing the rounds a little bit at the minute. He's going to be a free agent. He is the defender at Fulham. His name is Tosin. Let's just call him Tosin. No, it's Tosin Adarabayo. Yeah, Tosin. So Tosin. He is 6'5". He's going to be not signing a contract. It's good English there. At the end of the season, he is definitely leaving, as being reported pretty much everywhere. What more can you tell us about this? Any opinions on this guy, Craig? What do you reckon?
Well, I know he'll fit straight in because he's missed 12 games at Wintry this season. So,
sign him
so up. The medical staff are going to get to know him very well. So that's a bonus. But very similar to Fabian Shaw by all accounts. Which, to be honest, Shaw is like fine when he seems to be getting better with age, but he can only play for so long. And Tosin Adarabayo, totally butchered his name there. He is 26 years old, so he's still pretty much in the prime of his career right now. He's made 78 league appearances for Fulham. He's only scored 3 goals, so he's nowhere near as prolific, if you would call Shaw that, for a defender. But he's good on the ball, got a good range of passing. He likes to play out from the back as well and can't dribble. We all know how Shaw likes to go on those meandering runs forward every now and again into no man's land. He likes to do the same type of thing. So this could just be a direct long-term upgrade for Shaw. And the fact that he wouldn't cost us much, apart from maybe a hefty signing on fee and an expensive wage of $100,000 a week is what's being reported. Pretty good business in all accounts, providing his injury record, like I say, is a bit woeful.
Yes. As you say, he will fit right in. So he's an ex-Man City. Is he an ex-Man City youth, or is he just signed by them and then kind of flogged on for profit, as they tend to do?
Yeah, it looks away. I mean, he was from Man City from the 15-16 season, and he didn't leave until the 19-20 season. But he never actually made a first-team appearance in the league anyway.
All right, so we'll have to wait and see how that goes. The other name that's being mentioned is Lloyd Kelly from Eddie Howe's old team, Bournemouth. I think that's right, anyway. He was signed by Eddie Howe from Bristol City for pretty decent 13 mil back in summer 2019. I'm reading off this article here in case you wonder where I'm getting this from. What do you know about him? The last I heard, he wasn't a stranger to the... to the infirmary either, was he?
Nah, he's treatment table's his best friend. He misses more games than he plays from what I've been reading. But he's a good quality defender when he's on form. Can't imagine he's going to be starting every game. He could be, an early round cup game, injury cover, that sort of thing. I do reckon Lewis Hall will be our number one left back going into next season. Matty Target, whether he'll still be around next season once his signing is made, once it's confirmed, but it certainly looks that way. Matty Target could be on his way out, and then it just leaves Paul Dummett for other cover as well in the left back role if he's given an extension, just like his best mate has just been rumoured to have as well.
So Tosin is 26, Lloyd Kelly 25. Lloyd Kelly's left-footed centre defender and Tosin is a right-footed central defender. Which one of these has the pace? One of these has, is it Tosin? Does he have a fair bit of pace about him?
He has, aye, yeah. I mean, they're both not exactly slow, but one is definitely faster than the other, and I do believe it is Tosin.
Because I've complained about that a few times. I've lamented about our lack of pace across the entire back line, really.
Yeah.
Especially when, like, Zatino's not playing. Tino's not a slouch, but he's not like a full-on sprinting athlete, really. Lewis Hall seems to be running in sand pretty much most of the time, wet sand. Sven Botman's got the turn and circle of the arc. Shaw is usually down with a head injury during every game that he plays, or some other kind of injury. He's got a fine collection of injuries every single season, and he's not fast either. We could do with a bit of pace. We could do a bit. Not since the days of Yedlin have we had that kind of blistering pace at the back where you could, you know, you could get away with being a bit shit because you're just so fast that you could leg it back and put in a late challenge, you know? I think there's a lot to be said for somebody who's got a bit of pace at the back. I think it really does help out, especially if, you know, you're getting done by a ball off the top or, you know, on the transition or something, and you need someone with absolute mental speed to just kind of get back and provide that little bit of extra cover, just maybe put the man off his shot, that kind of thing. And we just don't have that. And especially when you've got the likes of Dubravka, who probably won't be here next season anyway, but when you've got the likes of him there refusing to do any sweeping, and when he does do a sweeping, it looks like he's just shat himself halfway through the motion of whatever he's trying to do. You need someone else there to back him up, don't you? So I think we could really do with that kind of pace. But just remains to be seen, as you say, whether or not these guys can stay fit long enough to actually make any sort of difference, doesn't it?
It does, aye.
And according to tapping merchant Fabrizio Romano on Twitter, Newcastle remain interested in Tosin as a free agent, but it's still not a done deal at this stage. Tosin is considering several options, and the race remains open with Newcastle among the clubs that are keen. He is definitely leaving Fulham as a free agent. As exclusively revealed last week. Yeah, whatever, mate. All right. Exclusive, my ass. All right, mate. Look, anything else you want to say about summer signings, or shall we move on to the Burnley preview?
No, let's move on.
Right you are, my friend. Right you are. Burnley preview. So, game of the weekend. I don't even know what day this is. What day we're playing? Saturday?
Yeah, it's a midnight kickoff for us, so literally Sunday morning. 3 p.m. Traditional 3 o'clock kickoff back in.
Yeah, right. 12 o'clock. I don't mind 12 o'clock. Honestly, it's miles better than 1 a.m. And, you know, it's shitloads better than 3 or 4 a.m. when we get those.
Slightly high.
So Newcastle away to Burnley. Burnley on a bit of a run right now, aren't they? They've actually managed to pull a bit of form together.
They are. And unlike Sheffield United last week, where, you know, they were just literally playing for pride for the remainder of the season, Burnley still have a decent chance of escaping relegation. So it's not as if they're just going to sit back after the first goal goes in and then just wait for the final whistle. They've genuinely got a good chance of getting out of it, so they will be putting up a fight. The last five games, they've picked up 4 points. It's not brilliant form, but as far as relegation goes, any points are bonuses at the minute.
Yeah, so they've won two and drawn five of the last eight and lost one, which was to Everton, which is a bit of a shame for most of us. Would have preferred that to be the other way around, but nonetheless, they are doing pretty well. But five draws, so kind of suggests that they are, whilst getting slightly better, still not in that kind of domination phase of the, you know, the arc. As you start to get better and better, you start to dominate games and get goals, hopefully, with any luck. They did give Man United a bit of a shot last week, did, and held them to a 1-1. I've just got the Football League table up here, the Premier League table. Burnley down there in 19th, second bottom. Played 35. They've got 24 points just above them. Luton Town to complete the bottom three there. Sheffield United already gone, of course. So Luton Town on 18th place on 25 points. Burnley on 24. And then Forest, 17th place with 26 points. So it's really, and with Brentford being on 35 and Everton having gotten out of the mess they're in on 36, it really just seems to be coming down to those three teams: Nottingham Forest, Luton Town, and Burnley. Burnley being the worst off just on points. So, as you say, Craig, plenty to play for at the bottom there. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be surprised if the bottom three is just the ones that go down is just what we see right now: Sheffield, Burnley, and Luton Town. But
could very well be.
I know Eddie Howe won't be doing this, but he won't be going to Burnley thinking, "Oh, these guys are, like, you know, second bottom of the shit. We should turn these guys over." Our You've got to remember our away form has been absolutely stinking all season. I think we've won four. Have I won four all season? Absolute garbage away form. So they're at home. They're fighting for their lives. The crowd's going to be bouncing. Vincent Kompany's going to have the players G'd up for this. You know, it's fighting for their lives time. It's balls on the line. Let's get out there and win by hook or crook. Newcastle with their desperate away form. It's not going to be easy, is it? How do you see this one going?
It's going to be tough. It really will be tough. But I'm just looking at the goals for and against for Burnley. And they've only scored 30 goals all season and conceded 70 in 35 games. So they've conceded an average 2 goals per game, both home and away. So it does show that there will be goals in it, but we're not exactly prolific away from home either. I think last time we scored an away goal was when we actually beat Fulham 1-0. Bruno got the goal. That was probably the best part of a month ago now. Then there was the shit show at Palace where we just didn't even turn up. So who knows which Newcastle will turn up. It'll be interesting to see. Plenty of time from the Sheffield United game to put a few things in practice to get things right. Because even that first half against Sheffield United was dire. Wasn't great at all, was it? So
it was so bad.
Which Newcastle will turn up, we will see. Will it be first half or second half Newcastle? Harvey Barnes made a huge difference in that game. Will he start this weekend? There's also talk Miggy's back. He's been captured in training, and the official club Twitter account has shared photos of him. So it looks like Miggy is back. Not sure on Bruno, not on Trips or anybody else who may be close to fitness. But Big Joe, he shouldn't be too far away. But having Miggy back, at least his cover for the bench, is going to have something.
I think I heard Trips is probably being primed for just the very last game of the season. Try and get him fit for that. I think Pope might be the same as well.
Poppy.
Look, I can't get too excited by the idea of Miggy on the bench. Yes, obviously it's extra legs and he's got his pace and all that, but it isn't the Miggy of last season, you know, the first half of last season when he was just unbelievable. He's very much every other time Miggy. Burnley apparently have won just 2 of their 13 Premier League games against the Toon. They've lost the past 5 in a row, and they've never lost 6 in a row against us in their entire history. So I wonder if Eddie Howe's been saying to them, look, come on, lads, let's go out there and really bury these bastards. Let's put them to the sword and let's not only push them towards the trapdoor, but let's give them the indignity of going 6 games, defeats in a row against Newcastle. Why do you think it is, though, that our away form is so bad compared to what on the outside, or in general, looks like a miles better home form?
I don't know. It's hard to put your finger on it. I can't even remember if a lot of the Champions League games have followed an away game. So maybe a Champions League hangover. I would need to go back and check the fixtures on that to see how that's worked out. But I do vaguely remember that a lot of the Champions League games followed by an away league game. Who knows? Injuries obviously didn't help. Traveling, that sort of thing. We do travel more as a club than any other in the Premier League by a significant margin due to the lack of clubs around us. Just one of those things that we have to deal with. Players don't exactly travel in cattle class these days, so they can't exactly really use that as an excuse. But towards the end of the season, when you're making long trips down to Bournemouth, and then I think our last 4 away games have been down to London, 4 trips to London on the belt, which is it's got to take its toll on you eventually, especially when you're having 3 games a week at one point. Maybe that had something to do with it. Who knows? Plus, you're playing decent competition. Yes, Chelsea are a car crusher of a club. Arsenal, they're pushing for the title. Palace, they're no mugs, even though their position would say otherwise in the table. It's going to be a tough game. It always is at Burnley. Even season before last, when they got relegated, we beat them 2-1 at their place. They got relegated that day, I think. We relegated them. Tough game, tough place to go. Company will have them fired up, but hopefully we can come out victorious and push up that table.
Yeah, absolutely. So just 14 of Newcastle's 53 league points this season have come in away games. Terrible. The lowest percentage of any side this term at 26%. Any side? What, even Sheffield United?
Really?
However, it's just what BBC says, unless I'm reading this wrong. However, jeez. Burnley have won the lowest share of their points so far in home games. 42%. 10 out of 24. So, yeah. Well, look, I mean, it's going to be a team that doesn't do very well on the road, but trying to push for Europe against a team that doesn't do very good at home, but is trying to survive in the league. So, like, it could be one of those absolute mental classics where it's just like, you know, basketball game back and forwards.
Aye.
Or could essentially be what you've just said, a stalemate. Do you think Eddie Howe will set up any different? Or, I mean, he's probably going to stay at 4-3-3, isn't he? But do you reckon he might change tactics a little bit? He adapted quite well to Spurs and just decided to sit back and hit on the break. Anything like that you think it might do? You think it might not bother pressing too high? Is there anything that you can think of that you might change a little bit this one?
Burnley do like to play out from the back, but they're not very comfortable in doing so. So I reckon the press will be back on. They've got one or two okay players, but there's nobody there that you would consider a real game changer unless they randomly have a worldie because of the opposition they're playing against. People normally step up their game when they play against the so-called bigger teams. But yeah, they've got one or two players that could maybe hurt you on a push, but we on paper should at least absolutely tear them a new one. Defensively, they're not solid, but then neither are we. Could this be another Luton 4-4? Who knows? Hope not for my dodgy ticker sake, but it would be great for the neutral, but I wouldn't mind having this one comfortably done with by half time.
Yeah, that would be nice. We don't get nice things like that usually.
Nah.
Do you think Burnley would take a draw? Is a draw any good to them at this point? Three games?
I think it'll depend on their run of fixtures towards the end. If they see themselves having a few winnable games, depending on the opposition, then yeah, maybe a draw will do. Is a draw enough to get them out of the relegation zone? No, because Forest are sat 2 points ahead. But bear in mind, Forest have still got another potential points deduction coming their way. So Burnley will be fighting for everything to get as close to Forest as they possibly can. So if and when that points deduction does come in, it could literally drop them back into that relegation zone and Luton and or Burnley take their place.
And one thing I've just remembered by looking at Google, so I didn't really remember, but I have heard this. Last game of the season, Burnley against Forest at Turf Moor.
That is young.
I have that one. So they've got us this weekend, then they've got Spurs away, which could be anything, frankly. And then they've got Forest at home. So if, let's say they looked at the Spurs game and went, ah, we're not going to win that one. Let's just write that one off. A draw against Burnley would take them up to 25th, not counting any other results, but they would take them up to 25th, which as it stands right now would be equal with Luton and one behind Forest, and then they've got to play Forest. I don't know, man. Like, you know, a draw probably wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for them. Maybe. I'm just trying to work out. I'm trying to think in my mind. Are they going to go hell for leather? Or are we going to, you know, are we going to just high press them into mistakes? They are with 11 injuries, I believe. And they've got four doubts as well. 11 injuries, four doubts. It's going to be a makeshift team, probably just on the basis of that. I don't know. I kind of think this might either be one of those horrible stodgy games where nobody wants to make a mistake, or like it's going to be hell for leather from both sides.
I think one thing that Cummings will try and do is pack out the midfield, because we always seem to struggle when teams do that. Not necessarily park with us, but pack out the midfield where we're just going to be overrun. And we all know Longstaff, when he's given no time on the ball, he's under pressure, he will lose a ball, he'll make a missed pass and give away possession, that sort of thing. Whereas Bruno, you could put 10 men around him, he'd still try and wriggle his way out of it, and most of the time he'd still get the pass out. So putting Longstaff under pressure when he's in possession, maybe the way they go about it by, again, packing out the midfield. Elliot Anderson, he's been canny since he's filled in on that left side of midfield role. So see what he can do. Hopefully he can finally get his first goal in the Premier League for us. It's definitely been coming. But that midfield, I think, is where the battle will be won or lost. And I do think Cummings will try and pack that out. But if they do try and play out from the back, we've got them on the high press. They're just not comfortable in doing it. And the keeper is useless with his feet. He's probably worse than Dubravka.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, I'm already looking forward to this. Like, it's going to be, I think this could be a really interesting game, this one. Alexander Isak has scored 19 goals this season in the league, 9 in his last 8 appearances. Not a bad return. He could become only the 5th different Newcastle player to score 20 or more goals in a Premier League season after Wall, Andy Cole, my hero Peter Beardsley, and Sir Les. So let's just hope that Isak manages to get on the end of one or two, or picks up the ball from the penalty spot or something like that, because that'll be a wonderful thing. We haven't had a 20-goal scorer for a long, long time since, by the looks of this thing. Well, it doesn't actually say when last time Alan Shearer did it, but nonetheless, it's been a while, let's be honest. Craig, let's wrap this up. How do you see this going? What's your prediction, score prediction?
I'm going to go with 3-1 away win.
Is Isak going to get the 20? Is he going to get a hat-trick at long last?
I don't think you get a hat-trick. He's saving that for Burnley at the Gallagher end. Not Burnley, sorry, Brighton at the Gallagher end. You heard it first, yeah? Isak is getting a hat-trick against Brighton at the Gallagher end. Head of the bookies right now and get it put on. Now I'm going to go 3-1. Isak will score. And again, Elliot Anderson to get that first goal.
Elliot Anderson, that'll be nice. All right, I will go for a... Bloody hell. This does feel like one of those things that could be anything, but I suspect we'll be far too strong for them. I will go for a 4-2 win. There you go. And I'll say Isak will get his hat-trick, and Andy Gordon will get the other one. Why not? Who knows? We have no idea what we're talking about, but that would be a pretty good return, and obviously that'll have us pushing up the table, chasing the coattails of Manchester United. All right, that will do for this episode today, Craigie. Thanks, mate. Just a reminder for anybody who's still watching that we do have Newcastle United coming across to the lucky land of Australia. It is how many weeks now? 2 weeks?
It's 3 weeks yesterday for the first game, I believe.
3 weeks yesterday, we will be taking on Spurs at the MCG, a big round circle ground with a rectangle in the middle. The views are going to be absolutely terrific. But it's going to be wonderful to see Newcastle over here. There are going to be meet and greets with the fans, and there'll be workshops with the expats over here and everybody else who supports Newcastle in Australia to discuss how they can, you know, expand the brand and everything like that. But Newcastle, and then against Spurs, and then there'll be an All-Stars game against Newcastle, which should be an absolute slaughter. Newcastle should slaughter them because the A-League is terrible.
You hope so, like.
But hopefully our mate Ryan Scott will be in goal because he's a Newcastle supporter. If you haven't seen that episode with him on, go and check it out. It's class, absolutely class. But if you want to know more about what's coming up, what's planned with all the Newcastle supporter groups, it's all being pulled together by the lads at Aussie Mags doing an absolutely terrific job. Get onto Facebook, search for Aussie Mags and find out what is going on. And if you can, meet up. And if you see any of us, we'll all be down there apart from me. If anyone's there that you see and recognise, come on over, say hello, tell us what a terrific job we're doing. And I'm sure we'll love to meet and greet some of the people who watch this podcast. All right, that'll do for now. Thanks to everyone who has watched and listened. Thanks to you, Craigie. And we shall see you for the next one. How are the tune?
How are the lads?